The lights are on red. We're away.
Hi, welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is October 9th, 2009, and this is episode 198. My name is Jules Cisek, and with me here is in a second is Jim Race, who also got to speak with Eugene Laverty. So make sure you listen to that interview. It's fascinating. It's at the end of the show. Enjoy. Okay, we've got Jim Race with us today.
Hi, Jules.
How's it going?
It's going well.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We had a great race weekend. I don't think either one of us got a lot of sleep, or some of us got maybe too much. But let's start with listener email.
Sure. We got one from Skylar Vicroy, and he wrote in, he said, well, it seems all the questions I had earlier have been answered. All this talk about not having two Americans or Brits on a team has been put to rest. Hell, in 2010, you're going to have a team with Italia with Grassini, Team Great Britain with Yamaha World Superbike Factory Team. We'll have to see how that works out. And, of course, team, what's the term you use, Jules? Textois. Yeah, Textois. Team America Texas with Tech 3. Funny how it went from, I can't remember the last team to have riders from the same country on it, to I wonder if this will be the new trend. So he has a question. Do you think this is a good thing? Will this bring in more sponsorship for the team, not so much for the riders of the team in general, since they're both from the same country? Rookie title in 2010 may be just as hard fought as the overall championship. On a side note, he says, I do see this as a good rule in a sense for the rookies to be on the satellite teams. What a way to bring some attention and TV time to them, not to mention sponsorship opportunities. Plus, the factories will be giving their satellite teams, hopefully, better equipment to showcase their new signings to the world. What do you think?
Well, thanks for the email, Skylar. That's good email. This actually came last week, just before we were done with the previous show, so we couldn't quite get it in there. But now that we know that Ben is definitely going to MotoGP, this makes even more sense. So I think that, we definitely were like, remember we were thinking like, when was the last time that we had two, and we came up with like Team KR, you know, which doesn't really count.
Right.
Necessarily when it's all actually, you know, related Americans.
Same family.
And then now we have this... Not just Team Italia, but Team Marco, you know,
right?
And the World Superbike Great Britain team and Team Texas. So, I think that in general, there was a sponsor kind of issue, like having you can cover more ground by having more riders from different countries. Obviously, right? You have more reach.
True, and you know, when I think one of the things that doesn't really happen very often is seeing American companies, with the exception of DeWalt, for example, this year for Tectoire, but the Monsters and the Red Bull's actually a European company coming in. And if you have an all Brit team in Yamaha World Superbike, or if you've got an all American team, it does give them a little bit more value and exposure in their home market. So I think it might be a good thing. Is it going to happen all the time? No, I think it's just a weird convergence this year.
Yeah. And actually there was a very interesting thing that Chris Vermeulen said just a couple of days ago. He said, when he announced that he's leaving and going to World Superbikes to ride with Kawasaki, he said, with him gone, in 2010, you're going to have 18 riders. And out of those 18 riders, 10 of them are going to be Italian or Spanish.
Well, I mean, that's not anything.
No, so it's not. But what I'm saying is you're going to run out of nationalities. You're going to have, and you know, we've got three American riders as well. So you very quickly see how it's going to be impossible to have teams that are not. That don't have two Spanish guys or two Italian guys, you know.
Yeah, that point is very well taken. I mean, we've traditionally had a lot of Italians and Spaniards in the championship.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, but this time it's really a lot. I mean, I don't think we've ever had. I mean, that's more than half of the field, just Italy and Spain. So,
well, maybe one of our loyal listeners will give us a country by country breakdown over the last n number of years. Go for it, somebody.
You know what? Actually, I believe that MotoGP.com has that exact statistic somewhere.
Ah, okay.
They do have that in their database, because I remember poking around once and seeing like a by country list for each year.
Or maybe RatsMC and his Moto Theory site, which is really cool. But anyway, again, thanks, Skylar. And there's some interesting stuff in there to think about.
Yep. But let's move on to the main event.
Which one? We had six of them.
Well, let's get to the one that was kind of boring.
Yeah. You know, I hate to say that, but okay, so we're going to talk about MotoGP, the GP race at Estoril. Boring, yeah, I just didn't have that down to the wire finish that we've almost come to expect a little bit this year, did it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had a couple good laps, and then everything settled in, and it was a snoozer. It was. Estoril doesn't generate. Estoril is the one track that I always look forward to. No matter what, it's going to generate a good race, and it just didn't. It just didn't. The top four, the Fantastic Four, spread all over the place. You know, I mean, we might as well just go through the results. Lorenzo won the race from pole. He won by 6 seconds.
I think so. Yeah, it was a big old gap
over Stoner, who we have to talk about obviously later because he's back. Who was only about a second or so ahead of Pedrosa. Pedrosa kind of made like the last
ditch effort
to catch him.
Yeah,
which is kind of unusual for Pedrosa. And then Rossi, another 8 seconds back from Pedrosa, and then a long way away was Colin Edwards in fifth, and I believe Elias finished sixth, which is not that surprising because he loves this racetrack, obviously, especially after 2006 when he won. But anyway, so obviously this field was very spread out. There were some battles, you know, deep down the field. We didn't get to see much of them.
No, I think probably the most exciting thing in the entire race was when I think Callio went out on like lap 22 or something, and it was like, oh, there's something different.
Yeah, he was in a battle with. He left much earlier than that. I think he went out in like lap 6 or 7.
Oh, okay.
He was in a battle with Hayden.
Yeah, with 22 to go. Yeah, I look at my show notes and I do have to laugh because I walked through that for the GP race, and I've got the note about Callio, and then the second one says, Adriana, blonde is not your color.
That's right. Yeah, you post that picture to Flickr.
Yeah, okay, that must not have been too exciting of a race.
But I have to say that the post-race celebration that Lorenzo did was really great. The entire weekend he had a Apollo helmet, and I don't mean Apollo the god. I mean Apollo as in the astronaut helmet. Because they had the livery was for the Fiat. How do you pronounce that?
Punto.
Punto? Punto?
Yeah,
okay.
Like a Punto Special or something like that. Apparently one of their...
So it's kind of like a silver, gray, off-white scheme. Actually quite nice looking. And to go with that, he got this really amazing helmet design that looked like a Apollo astronaut crew helmet. And so whenever, you know, the cameras were on him, he was moving in slow motion, waving in slow motion. And then he, of course, got to plant the Lorenzo Land flag. He did it in slow motion. It was really quite funny.
Yeah, he was hamming it up. And I enjoyed it. And, you know, how often do you see a flag of another country on, a European's helmet? I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He did have the little American flag on there.
Yeah, so you might see that if you know they're running at Indy or Laguna, but it was funny. Yeah, the slow motion walk through the kitty litter at the end of the race when he was going to plant the flag just had me howling.
Oh yeah, especially because most of the corner workers were like,
"What's
going on? What's going on? Is he okay?"
Yeah. You know?
Anyway, so that was, we already talked more about that than we talked about the race, because that's the kind of race it was, unfortunately. However,
yes,
I think the results are super cool because now, because Rossi finished fourth, he finished off the podium for the first time in 8 years.
No, not that long. Oh, you mean at Estoril?
Estoril.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had two guys between him and Lorenzo, so he lost 12 points, which means that that 30-point lead he had is now only 18 points, and there's still three races to go. And he sucks at Valencia, whereas Lorenzo is really good at Valencia, which means that he really, Rossi, in order to win this championship, he's going to have a nice gap before they go to Valencia. So, and he's only got two races to do it. Phillip Island, where he's very good, obviously, but so is Stoner, and so is Lorenzo, and so is Pedrosa. Well, Pedrosa probably not so much. He was there. He was really good there in the 250s. And then you got Sepang, where Rossi has had good results. I don't know. I don't think Lorenzo has ever really had like a great series of results there.
I'm trying to remember.
Pedrosa was fantastic there a couple of times.
Yeah.
And Stoner. So, you know, Stoner and Pedrosa are now key in this championship, despite the fact that they can't win it, because they are going to decide how many points are between Rossi and Lorenzo, and they're now obviously running at a good enough pace where it's not just a runaway between Lorenzo and Rossi. Those guys are going to be in the mix.
That's very true, and you know, if there wasn't a ton of across all the classes in series, there wasn't a whole lot of super exciting racing this weekend, but everything is tightened up in the classes that there is no longer decision or that a decision still needs to be made.
Yep.
And that was something I was like really stoked about and you know, a little worried about in some ways, but yeah, certainly the premier class is going to come down to some serious battles. And your point's really well taken about Pedrosa and Stoner. Let's talk about Stoner for a minute, because I think he kind of surprised a lot of us. You and I talked last week. We were like, hey, he's probably going to struggle. We'll see what he gets. Maybe a fourth would be good. And the guy came out and kicked ass.
Now, hang on a second. That's not at all what we said. We said we expected him to do quite well, right? Because this is Stoner to a T, remember?
Well,
we were talking about that. We were saying, like, you know, it's just like when he shows up to a practice and says, you know, I'm just going to lay down a couple of laps and be the fastest. I'm not at all surprised. In fact, I think that it was almost inevitable because, I mean, I'm really glad that he's back in full strength, but I also think that part of it is because there's nothing pressuring him anymore. There's just no pressure left.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and he's got, obviously an awful lot to work for right now. And it did kind of become clear to me that Ducati really did have his back when he came back. And you could see that in the results as well. Maybe I was saying that last week. I don't know.
I think you're mixing up what we were talking about and what was being said on Ride On 2, because on Ride On 2, there was a lot of talk about back and forth about,
very well be the case.
I think we, like, you know, early last week there was on Ride On 2, there was a lot of talk about, you know, is he going to arrive and can he last the distance and, you know, whatever. Anyway, so it's great that he's back, and I'm going to hold judgment on his recovery, unfortunately, for quite a while, because in my mind he kind of broke down last year.
Right.
For three races. This year, he had his three races, you know, so what's going to happen next year? And he's really going to have to go through a full season again to really say that he can take it. Because, you know, and we were talking about this on Ride On 2 today, I believe, where I think what really separates, I think that Stoner is a very talented rider. There's no doubt that he's one of the best riders that ever lived. However, when you compare him to Rossi, you also have to take into consideration the longevity of Rossi's skill applied, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's hit the consecutive number of races that he's actually run. I think he's probably got a record for that, too. He's got records all over the place.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and Rossi doesn't break.
He's never had this kind of issue where he just completely floundered for a while or had, you know, three falls in a row. He had a miserable 2006, but even then he was winning races in between.
Right. And well, on top of that, the guy still crashes like a, you know, an 11-year-old kid. He crashes, you know, maybe break a finger or wrist or something, but never.
That is amazing. I know. I have to kind of knock on wood for his sake.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, it was great to have Casey back this weekend. And I think everybody thought so, including the rest of the racers, at least before the race. I think
certainly Lorenzo was very happy about it.
Yeah.
Extra 5 points right there.
Yep. So, yeah, it was fun. And you're right. The points have tightened up again. And I think we've got a good look forward.
Yeah, if Bob was on the show, he'd be saying it's like we're coming up to the last lap and it's actually a really good race. You know,
where the hell is he anyway?
Yeah, he's around. He'll make an appearance soon.
Okay, all right.
Two 50s.
That was fun. That was probably the best race. One of the best races of the weekend. And
GPs.
Yeah, the middle of it was great.
Yeah, the middle of it was amazing. That's true.
You know, we had some real surprises of that. Glancing at my notes, DeRosa, Ayama's teammate, passed him and running in second for a significant portion of the race. What the hell?
Yeah. Then he had a bad fall.
Yeah, he did. He had a bad fall. There was one pass into the chicane that, Simoncelli made that I practically got down and bowed. It was this beautiful pass that I've seen in a long time. Just super clean, super fast, off the brakes, no problem whatsoever. It was one of those passes where he's going in and you're like, there's no way he's going to run wide, and not even a problem. It was like lap 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Simoncelli is potentially one of the best riders I've ever watched. He rides it to finish. You know, So his little venture into Imola last week on the Aprilia, he blew me away that he could go from 250s to a track he's never been at, on a bike he's never been on a type of bike that he's never been on, a bike as powerful as it is, and do so well. There was a little bit of an interesting kind of mean-spirited comment that I don't remember who made it. It's a famous journalist. I don't want to say names because I thought it was kind of mean. But he said basically that it kind of proves that World Superbikes is really where the guys who couldn't make it in MotoGP go. That a guy like Simoncelli can go there and beat Max Biaggi and 20 other riders.
That is a bit smarmy. Well,
because the truth is that, you know, Simoncelli is kind of an exceptional person. Like, you can't just take anybody out of MotoGP and they're going to... It just doesn't work that way. Plus, the Aprilia is an amazing motorcycle.
That's totally true. I mean, and you also have to think about the fact that Simoncelli is still a kid. And a big part, at least to me, or what I saw from what he did at Imola, was to kind of prove his mettle on a four-stroke. And
he had nothing to lose, really.
Yeah. So you look at that, and you're like, okay, he's going to be on Grassini bike next year. Well, he's already shown that on a big, heavy, lunkish, you know, race bike compared to the wizardry that is the 800cc MotoGP bikes, the guy can ride. And so that is a real good sign for next year. And, you know, this is another thing I've wondered about. And I haven't heard anything, and we probably won't until, you know, next season rolls around. But currently, you know, Elias has been on the semi-factory bike on the current spec bike or whatever they, you know, and I put quotes around that because it never really is the current spec.
Right, it's like 2 weeks behind at least.
Yeah.
Or two races.
But I wonder who's going to be number one at Grassini. Or if they'll have two number ones and they'll both have higher spec machines. It's an interesting question.
Actually, you know what? I have not heard anything about who might get factory support.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I will jot that down for later inquisition.
Right, there you go. Anyway, so the thing is, you know, so Simoncelli goes to World Superbikes, when you know, gets on the podium, then he's at Estoril and he wins a race and by 5 seconds, which in 250s is pretty rare.
Sure.
But the big news was Bautista fell off, and that meant that the championship is now very interesting because both Bautista and Simoncelli are a point apart, and they're one race win behind Aoyama.
Yeah, and that was really a not very comfortable looking fall, was it?
Well, he seized.
Oh, he did seize.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought that he actually caught the line, which they were talking about in the broadcast, and I'm like, well, you know, it's dry and everything, and these guys are all over the line, so why would that be an issue? Ah, okay.
Now, later on, after the race, the MotoGP.com pit guy was in the garage with them, and they said, yeah, it seized.
Okay, yeah, Ian Williams, I believe is his name.
Ah, there you go, thanks.
Bummer.
Which totally makes sense, because when you look at that fall, it just came so suddenly.
It did, but it kind of looked like he'd also locked the front, too. Maybe it happened right when he was braking and he got all messed up.
Yeah.
It was going into a corner.
Right.
But 250s was fun in the middle, but then, like you said, it stretched out and Simo got off to a really big lead. And again, that kind of, you know, tosses that championship in a little bit of a butter churn.
Yeah, but they had the crazy second place finish.
Yeah.
Meglio and Hector Barbera.
Well, it wasn't really a finish until like 20 minutes later, was it?
Well, you know, you know the whole story, how they finally decided who won, who got second, right?
Well, yeah, okay. So what Jules and I are talking about is the cross the line by Meglio and Barbera. Even from the overhead angle, was so tight, and initially they'd given them they had a staggered finish, but everybody's like, well, wait a minute. So they held it off, and we're sitting here waiting for the podium, and we'll talk about the podium in a moment because that was even funnier, the shuffle back and forth. But they finally awarded them both with the exact same time, but it was a photo, right, Jules?
The photo also showed them exactly crossing the line at the same time. So what finally decided it was who had the fastest lap in the race.
Huh.
And it was Meglio.
That's kooky.
Isn't that amazing? That's never happened before. That's never, ever happened before.
I do not remember that ever happening before.
Because even if when you have the exact same times, usually like you could see like the tire, one tire is just slightly ahead. These guys were so close that they just could not, the photographic evidence was not conclusive enough. And so they just went to some rule that may have just gotten made up on the spot.
You think
I don't know if there is
flip the coin somewhere. But anyway, so you're right. That's astounding. But the weirdest thing was the podium ceremony. So
yeah,
out they come, and you know, all three of them are lined up, and I think it was Barbera in second and Meglio in third. You know, because it goes, well, anyway, you can picture it. And how many times did they switch back and forth? Like two or three?
Before the podium, you mean?
No, while they were actually on the podium.
I think they were just goofing around after the first one.
Yeah, but I think in the end, I don't even think the right guys got the right trophies, so they probably had to swap later. But and the flags were all messed up and all that. So, I think that was just a bit confusing, but also amusing at the same time, because
it just really, like, it always amazes me that you can run, because they were running together for almost the whole entire race,
right?
And then to finish like that, that's just so cool. I love it.
They're measuring to the thousandth of a second. I mean, how much
with lasers?
Yeah, how much farther do we have to go?
Yeah.
And they were talking about, you know, where the transponder location is on the bike. And,
right. Exactly. Oh yeah. My god, that was so cool.
But that part of the race was great. And much as I wish Hero had been farther up, I guess that might have been the most exciting finish of the weekend.
Yeah. Well, except for World Superbikes. But the thing about this is that Aoyama now, this is the biggest lead I believe he's had all year.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up with just three rounds left, it's really nice to have that kind of a lead. But of course, it's not over. And Simon Chile is now only within 26 points. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be, I think that the 125 is pretty much decided. I'll just very quickly mention that Simon could have wrapped it up here in Estoril, but he fell off and didn't finish the race. Or actually, no, he got back on. And he finished 12th, right?
Right.
And
I've yet to watch the 125.
Okay, so the 125 basically was he made a mistake. He was way up ahead. All he had to do was win and have Bradley Smith finish, I think, fourth or less. And Iannone fell off. Corsi, I don't think was within striking distance as long as Simon won. So. But he fell off, and he said he actually fell off because he got too excited about halfway through the race. So it's not over yet, but he's way ahead, and it's just a matter of like where is he gonna be crowned? I think he would have really liked to have been crowned close to Spain, but it may happen in Australia on the other side of the world.
Very true, very true. Yeah, the 125 has been fun, and yeah, I remember calling you on Sunday night. I'm like, so. I figured it out, Jules. If we're going to watch all of the races that we want to watch today, we're looking at like 10 hours of viewing time. And that's
yep. yep.
That's just crazy.
I had a great day.
Yeah?
Yeah. I watched pretty much everything I wanted to see. And then, but I watched, you know, 250s and MotoGP live. And
yeah.
And then the rest of the racing. And yeah, it was, oh God, what a great weekend. It was really fun.
I had, well, as you know, I had big plans to try and watch MotoGP live, and apparently my body failed me and my brain failed me, and I managed to fall down on a nearby horizontal surface.
I'm going to have to share this with the listeners because I was up all night and Jim was twittering like a little girl all night long. I'm going to stay up. I'm going to make it to the race. And sudden silence. And then like at 8 a.m., damn it.
Yeah,
that was funny, dude.
I have no idea how that happened. It was funny because I was doing an awful lot of things to try and keep my mind off of sleeping, and I didn't really feel that tired. But at a certain point, something just must have taken over, and I was so close. It was like three.
I know. Your last update was like a three. I think they were lining up in the grid for the 250s at the time.
I think people were lining up the grid to see if I was going to be able to stay awake. Anyway, yeah, I know it was kind of funny, and I was amused about that, and then I kind of ate into a bit of my day. Yeah.
Let's move to France.
Absolutely. Well, hey, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean talk about the races?
Yes. Oh, let's talk about Magny-Cours.
Yes.
World Superbike Magny-Cours and the incredible photo finish we're going to have in World Superbikes as a result.
Yeah, I have a bit of an expletive written down in my notes for that race that I probably can't repeat. But
there you go. You can say anything you want on the show. Because I can always erase it.
Okay. Link clap. Holy fuck. with the exclamation points at the end.
Nice.
Yeah, it was World Superbike Race 1 was actually a bit of a surprise because we don't see Mr. Spies get hole shots very often.
Yeah, that's right. And especially because last time around at Imola, he had terrible starts that he had to overcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so he got the whole shot and he never let off. Although what happened in the second half of the race was just astounding, I thought. So we had Spies leading the race. Haga and Biaggi were locked in the battle for second and third. And Jonathan Rea did not knock anybody off.
No, he did, but he was actually riding really well.
Yeah, he was.
And he was threatening, you know, in the first few laps, but he had a really weird situation. He went wide in this one corner that came into play later in the day, and just went wide in it and kind of pulled over and parked, and everybody's like, well, what the hell?
That's right. Yeah, he was coming down the hill and looked like he basically just like he ran wide, but he stopped.
Right. And he was still under power, but it was clear that the bike was not functioning the way it should. And I was thinking about that tonight. And the one thing, you know, I haven't heard anything, is any explanation as to what happened, even through the hands-free press stuff. And I'm suspecting, if I hazard a guess, that he may have like broken a clutch plate or something like that, which will definitely slow you down and make you completely uncompetitive, because he was able to get back to the pits, but he went back and he parked it.
Yeah. Interesting. And you think it happened as he was coming down that like little straight between those two corners down the hill?
My guess is that he was cycling on the spinner clutch going into the corner and something, you know, I could be completely wrong.
That sounds pretty good. I like it.
Clearly something happened to the bike and he was not able to continue. Good thing was, you know, he didn't go down, but it was fun to have him up there in a non-wild man position.
yeah, that's true. He you know, I mean, it's almost he was also figured in the second race, and it almost seems like somebody had a little talking to him, because both races he was very different than the previous one.
Maybe the Flamini brothers had a little set down with him after his antics at Imola.
Right. So, like, you know, it's fun. It's you're a very exciting rider to watch, but we've got a championship going on here, buddy. You know, which, you know, the last time somebody yelled at somebody about a championship like that, that didn't go over so well. But that was in
the
series we shall not speak of.
Yes. Yeah.
but anyway, so Biaggi and Max. Oh, sorry, Biaggi and. Haga had a great fight.
They did.
Really great fight. And Biaggi was riding the perfect lines, defending his position.
He was hauling ass to the end. He set, like, I think he set the lap record with like two to go. And that's just like astounding.
Yeah, that's true. He also had Aprilia definitely have a something. That motor is really something, because on the Nori could not pass him on the straights at all. I mean, it was like the couple times that he got past him, Biaggi repassed him immediately on the next available straight.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very hard for Haga to get past him. But he did get past him like seven or six laps from the end. And then he finally broke off from Biaggi, and he was on fire. Nori was like he hit the nitro button, you know, nitro Nori.
Yeah.
And he actually managed to catch... I remember there was the commentators were saying, well, he's about 10th faster here, he's about 10th faster here, but there's just not enough laps. And all of a sudden, he's like 4/10 faster, and yeah, he's there. And he's on Spies rear tire. And then Spies that made that mistake. And I've watched that a couple times, and I just don't understand how Spies managed to get back in front of Nori. That was just pure magic.
It was amazing. And what Jules is talking about is like three or four corners from the end. Ben went really wide. Nori was right on his tail at the time. And when everybody saw that, because he actually went out of camera, if you remember.
Yes.
And I think a lot of us were holding our breaths thinking that he may have actually gone off course. And if that was the case, he would have been screwed. But the next thing you know, you see them coming to the exit of the quarter together, and Spies has actually managed to pull out front. So I think essentially what he did was kind of created his own super late apex. And part of me has to guess that Nori was surprised by that whole thing. And
maybe turn it down a little bit.
Maybe was waiting to see what was going to happen. I don't think he would have turned it down because he thought he had it in the bag.
No. I think he was worried that maybe there's going to be a crash.
Right.
You know?
But Ben managed to get back in front of him. By then, there were only like two or three corners left. And damn if he didn't win the race. And I think that might have been what my previous expletive was about. I'm sure it was.
Because the finish was fantastic. I mean, Ben clearly beat Haga. It wasn't like a photo finish or anything like that. That's the kind of thing we want to see with two top guys. And so then he took over at the front with 3 points, right? Or two points ahead.
Yep.
And then, yeah.
And, which, frankly, when it came to race two, actually made a pretty big difference because race two was not at all like race one.
No, it was not. One, we just get right into it.
Okay, sorry. I'm shooting for the best segue I could do.
Well, you have copious notes, so I'm just playing along.
Okay, all right. race two was pretty good, but as I said, it was a fair bit different. One of the big surprises on it was Fabrizio going down lap three. Mm-hmm. And that, for I think everybody, was a surprise because it looked like it was going to be more challenging. And I think at the time that he went down, he was in second. So, but the thing that was really key to race two was that Ben lost the plot. And my understanding is he went out on a tire, on a different tire than he did in race one. It just didn't work.
Yeah. All that he said is nobody's actually said anything about what actually happened, but whether they had a different tire or whatever, but definitely they did say that the front tire was garbage.
Right. And apparently was a relatively drastic change as far as the tire spec goes from what he'd run in the first race. And essentially what it did is it consigned him to the rear of the fast guys in the front, and he never threatened for the front.
Never.
He never did. And in a way it was kind of like some of the racing at Imola when he had, in theory, engine management problems, in that he could get close when they all started dicing up front, but it was clear that he was never going to get past anybody.
Right. Well, not here. Here he was just on his own.
Right, right. And so it was pretty straightforward race. I can't think of anything real exciting that happened in the middle.
There was a couple times when Ray and Biaggi had some really good dicing, and I was thinking, you know, Ben's probably back there. He's not wishing anybody any harm, but it sure would help his championship if those two guys took each other out.
Yeah, you know? And I will confess that I was thinking the same thoughts might be in his head.
Right.
But as a racer myself, you never ever want to think that way.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that there is always going to be a small part of you that kind of wishes, you know, at least, you know, get a flat or,
right.
You know, run off course just a little bit and let me move up. But yeah, that certainly did. It certainly did change the complexion once again. You know, we're doing this whole yo-yo thing with the championship, and trying to figure out where people are going to land is just crazy.
Yeah, because Nori won the race, but because there were two guys between him and Spies, he gained those 12 points, same as Jorge Gain over Rossi.
Right.
But here, Ben was only 2 points ahead, so now Haga is up 10 points.
Right.
Which is, you know, two race wins. If Spies wins both races in Portimao and Haga comes in second in both races, we're going to have a very interesting situation because they're going to be tied on points, but Spies already has more wins than Haga, so that would put him way over the top, and he would win by virtue of the number of races won, which I don't think has ever happened.
No, I don't think it has.
And it could happen because Spies is good at Portimao. He's actually been there before.
Yeah, well, I mean, he tested there last year postseason,
yeah,
and ran, I think, like second fastest times, I think behind Fabrizio, actually, if I remember correctly. And certainly a track, and he walked away from the track. He's like, oh, this is fun. This is like the weirdest parts of U.S. tracks all thrown together into one. Except
that's
for
right. I remember that when he was talking about that. That's right.
Except for it's got runoff. So yeah, that will be fun. You know, one thing I do want to mention about race two, which was probably one of the weirdest things.
Oh God, that was so weird. Go.
Yeah, it was. Apparently, I guess because of the angle or sun or whatever, the flagman did not see Haga come across the line until he was literally perpendicular to the start-finish line. And while Haga came across and kind of pumped his fist, I don't think he ever saw the checkered flag. And Biaggi, probably out of just, you know, well, I better not slow down, hung on his tail. So these guys do a full nother balls-out race lap, while you've got the corner workers standing on the rumble strips around the corner, waving their flags, like, you know, in celebration, like they do at the end, I can't imagine what was going through their minds. You know, I think Norrie must have been like, I can't stop. I need to make sure I finish this. I need to win.
Right. Well, I mean, this is where, like, the experience of a racer comes into play, right? We've had Kenny Jr. think he was on his last lap and not win a race. We had Julian Simon this year totally blow a win and not even get on the podium because he thought he had finished the race. And, you know, like, if you're even, it's kind of like, you know, if there's any doubt, just keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I mean, at a certain point, it became kind of surreal, you know?
It was surreal because they really were going.
Corner workers actually standing on the track and, you know, waving flags and bowing down. And these guys are just like, yeah, it was really weird. I heard some people say
but they got to celebrate twice because it did look like Haga knew that it was the end of the race, but because he didn't see that flag, he said, I might as well go around again.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, I don't think anybody's really going to complain about a bonus lap for us. I think they should do that all the time.
Right.
That would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
It's also interesting that they didn't run out of gas.
That, because, you know, I thought about the same thing too. I'm like, okay, that's an awful lot of conservative fuel that they put into that bike to be able to go another lap at that kind of pace. So yeah, very good point. Very good point. Yeah, that was kind of a capper to the two World Superbike races. I'm like, okay, that's pretty weird and pretty amusing.
Yeah, I basically had just a huge grin on my face after both those races because, I mean, we're going to basically see a photo finish championship.
Yep.
Which we had that in 2000 and no, we didn't have it quite in 2007. Yeah, we sort of did, I guess, except that it was, but nobody had to win, you know?
Right. It's always fun when it goes down to the end.
Yeah.
And it being close keeps everybody's interest and frankly keeps the teams hungry as hell, and that's the way
and you know what else, it's like the entire from the beginning of the year I've wanted Haga to take the championship, but at this point I've been so entertained by both those riders that, like, I'm gonna be happy whoever wins. I just want to see a good race. I don't want it to be like where they're the guy who wins it is like in sixth and the other guy fell, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
I just want to see a good two races.
Yeah, I think if we saw both of those guys on the podium, no matter who ended up with the championship, we'd be in both races. I think we'd be exceptionally happy. So, and you know, and so that brings up another thing. If I can step off of the World Superbike podium here and talk very briefly, because we'll hear from Eugene in a bit. About World Supersport, because that too has come down to a last race battle. And that race, just very quickly, you know, Cal's had some troubles in the prior two races at Imola and Nürburgring or Brno, one of the two, and either not finished the race or finished very far back. And this time it was Eugene's turn, and Eugene crashed in the same corner that I was talking about earlier with Ray having his mechanical.
We should also mention the fact that that's also the place where, well, the corner before is where Tom Sykes crashed, but that corner is where the bike ended up.
Yeah, exactly. And boy, that bike go a long way.
Oh man, that was scary shit.
When the bikes are tumbling across track end over end is one of the scariest things you can think about, because as a racer, you've got no idea where the thing is going to end up or what direction it's going to bounce at. And a bike standing on its toe is not something you want to meet face to face. Thank God it was a slow corner. It's a relatively slow corner. And that was the good thing for Eugene, was, you know, he tucked the front at maybe, you know, 40 miles an hour, and it took him a while to get the bike restarted, but he was able to get back on the bike. The scores in the meantime, you know, amazing what they've done with the Kawasaki this year, because he led Crutchlow for the entire race and won the race. Eugene was coming back up through the field, but there was a red flag for a crash somewhere back in the field. And they cut a couple laps off the end. So Eugene ended up right behind his teammate, Miguel Pariah, in 13th, which is not good. So now he's 19 back as opposed to being two back at the beginning of this weekend. And there's only one race left. And you know what that means.
I mean, he has to win, and he has to hope for something else. Exactly. Happened to Kurt. So,
yeah, what was the thing we were talking about earlier? You know, a racer doesn't want hopes. The hope's nothing.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah.
Well, hmm.
Well, we'll have to hear what Eugene has to say.
Indeed.
Okay, let's get some news. So let's see, GPs. We've already mentioned last week that Ben Spies is now confirmed to be on the Tech 3 team in 2010.
Indeed. And then what we have on top of that, of course, is his wild card at Valencia. You know, I'm wondering, there's weird stuff that I'm hearing about that. It might be a Tech 3. It might be some other bike, clearly Yamaha.
Right.
But maybe not branded with Tech 3. I don't know if that's true. There's been so many whispers going on right now about different things. It's like hard to keep up. But the bottom line is, yeah, he will be there, which is fantastic because we know that the winter testing is massively limited. And so since his season is obviously going to be over after the Porto Mile race, he's going to have a chance to get in, 3 days of testing, if you will.
It's a very clever move. And, that's a very good point. What did they cut it down to? I think it's just two sessions, two practice weekends, right?
Yeah, I think it's like a half hour on some Tuesday in November they're going to run.
God.
whatever it is, it's really tight. And there's not a lot of people that are very happy about it, and especially with the... I'm not seeing all the logic of it. You can cut it down, but these guys are going to an even more restrictive engine specification for 2010. They got to know what these things are going to do. So I don't know. But again, yeah, 3 days on a bike kind of makes you wonder what motor he's going to use. Is there like a pre-sealed motor for a replacement rider? How's that work?
Well, I think a wild card is not affected by that because it doesn't come out of anybody's motor budget.
Oh, they give him like the April M1 engine then.
Or they could give him something brand new that is completely unwound because they're.
True. Well, no, I'm saying the April spec of the M1 engine.
Oh, the next April spec.
Yes.
The 2011 spec. Mm. I mean, yeah, 2010, sorry. I'm jumping ahead 2 years. Which actually leads up to this next story, which is that they decided to change the engine durability rule. So if you may remember, they had the rule was that if you run out of engines and you have to run another, that the rider takes a 10-point penalty. Well, they changed that where it's only the manufacturer, so only the manufacturer's championship is affected. The manufacturer can lose the 10 points, but the rider doesn't lose 10 points. They get put in the back of the grid.
Which I think it makes sense.
It makes sense because there could be some gaming kind of thing where you could have a situation in which you arrive at the last race and you decide not to race because you're much more likely to win the championship, let's say, or place a certain place in the championship. Than to risk, losing 10 points over the weekend.
Right, and if you get a fast guy in the back of the grid, it's always kind of fun to watch him come through.
That's true, yeah.
I think if we get into a situation where we're going to see people with having to uncork engines that were not available prior, I don't necessarily think it's going to be the riders or team's fault. I think it's going to be a situation of a damaged engine from a crash or something, and you simply run out. And I don't necessarily think that is a team or a rider's fault.
I think the rule was changed not because they were thinking of who was at fault, but rather how the thing would be gained. No manufacturer is going to be able to. They're not. They're, I mean, the manufacturer's championship is just not that important.
Right, right. Well, it's not important to the fans, but I have a feeling it's very important to the manufacturers.
It's very important to the manufacturers, of course, but you know, they're not going to. It would be so obvious that they were doing something like that, sabotaging the rider.
Yeah, very true.
For those points, you know.
Very true. So, I think it's a good change, and thank you for doing that. But I think that we still will need more engines as the year comes on. Yep. You know, this next one, you're going to have to help me on this. This next story, you run with it because I'm not quite sure where you're going.
Well, Lorenzo has been playing mind games in the last few days since the race.
I can buy that.
And one of them is that he's claiming that Rossi's been copying his setups at the last couple of races. And there's actually an article in GP Week in which Burgess is talking about how both teams borrow each setups from each other, and that in every single case where Lorenzo has borrowed Rossi's setting, he's ended up going back to his own, because the two are just so different that their settings don't work for the other. So, yeah, you know, obviously a little bit of a mind game. I just found it hilarious that Lorenzo is basically trying to play these games. And I have to find this article that my wife actually found about Lorenzo. The gist of it was that it talks about Lorenzo and how he was, when he was growing up, he was a really big Max Biaggi fan. And then one day his dad said, you know, maybe you should check out this Rossi guy. He's, you know, kind of cleaning Biaggi's clock. And Lorenzo then became not necessarily a Rossi fan, but a Rossi
emulator.
And that this article goes to, and actually says, you know, he like learned how Rossi talks to the press and learned all about the you know, how he treats his fans and stuff like that. And if you follow that to the, you know, the unspoken kind of conclusion, it's like, you know, Lorenzo has kind of a manufactured personality, and this kind of plays into that too, because he's doing these mind game things that are really very Rossi like.
Yeah, that's exactly the term that I was going to use. I mean, I don't think that anybody has the capability to out Rossi.
Right. Right.
But it's certainly amusing to watch somebody not necessarily try, but to use some of the same tactics that Valle has used to masterful success over the years with racers that he's tried to
psych out. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that Scott Jones wrote this great email to us a few weeks ago. And I saw the same thing. When you're walking around in the paddock, there's like, you know, there's the fan area and there's this like the other area. And when Rossi passes through the door, he's still smiling. He's still going to be talking to the people behind that are outside of the fans' point of view. And there's still people that are asking him questions and he's still answering. But when Lorenzo disappears, he changes.
Yeah.
He becomes a different guy. He becomes kind of he's all business, which is actually cool to see, but it also puts kind of like a shadow on his public personality.
Public persona, yeah.
You know.
And the only way anybody can be Rossi is to be
you don't want to track, actually.
Well, yeah, but I mean just be the same way, is to actually have that genuine, you know, love for everything.
Yeah, it has to come from within, because the other thing is it's not going to last. Nobody's able to play for that long. You know, eventually the real Lorenzo will come out, and maybe he'll become an asshole again, but maybe not. Maybe he really did become, because he was an asshole. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well,
quite often.
I think pretty much everybody thought that when he was coming into GPs that they weren't going to like him. And
we all were like, hey, you know, he's matured.
Yeah. How much of that is real or not?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Frankly, I don't really care, because I'll take even the manufactured personality over what we thought we were going to expect before. So
that's a good point. And the other thing is that just like with Stoner and the personality crap there. You know, that's one side of it, but the other side is the racing, and you can't say that, oh, well, Lorenzo is just good because he's mimicking somebody. He's fucking right. good, and that's all that matters.
Yep, you know? Absolutely. I will agree. Yeah.
Let's go on.
Okay, we'll move on. Simple stuff, a couple of little things here. Or maybe not.
Well, Espargo is now signed with Primark, which is really cool. So Aleix Espargaró kind of got the ride out of the blue because they just needed somebody to fill in during the whole Stoner saga. And right. And did really well. And now he's got a contract on the MotoGP team, which is so cool.
Which is very cool for him, but also has a lot of people scratching their heads because his record, if you will, in racing is not anything that's like, woo, you know, nobody actually think that would end up on a GP bike. So he certainly impressed somebody and did the right things. And we know that he ran really well right off the bat, and I think that's the kind of thing Ducati is looking for.
Yep.
And then your second question was, what the hell's up with Pacini?
Yeah, what the hell? Well, I said actually, what the F is up with Pacini? But so we know that he switched bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's riding with
Cafe Latte,
and he's been guaranteed. Daniel Epp has actually guaranteed that ride for the rest of the season. So he actually will be. He hasn't missed any races due to this craziness with Team Toth.
No.
But he's come really awful close.
Yeah, he has. Well, I mean, he missed all day Friday and still came back and ran a relatively successful race.
Yeah.
And looked good doing it and just looked like himself. I don't believe the bike that he was on was the full RSA spec Aprilia. I think it was maybe a pumped up LE, but still... I'm not sure what place did he finish in. Do you know off the top of your head? Did he
no, finish? I don't.
Okay. But I remember seeing him and going, okay, he looks good and looks fine. Yeah. So that was, you said Daniel Epp was the person that,
he's the guy who runs, Cafe Latte.
Okay. And then, you know, what's going to happen next year? Well, as you mentioned before, there really aren't any seats left except for if the FB Corsa project actually comes to fruition. And, you know, frankly, that's all about money, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so...
Well, the thing is that... So I had a very interesting chat with Liam quite a few weeks ago, and he told me something that I didn't really read anywhere before, which is that when Pacini was younger, a young racer, he was in a pretty bad crash, and he really messed up his left arm.
Okay.
And he broke it at one of the growth plates.
Mm.
So one of his arms, you can't usually tell, but ever since Liam mentioned that to me, I've looked, and sure enough, one of his arms is much thinner than the other. He might not be able to handle a MotoGP bike. And you know, he did that test with Ducati and maybe found out that it's going to be too much.
It's interesting you mention that because... And I've had arguments about this with people for days, but a lot of the people that are stepping up from the lower classes, you know, they're relatively small guys, and we've got guys coming out on MotoGP bikes that, regardless if they're dumbing down the engines for next year, they're still not just like they're not easy to handle stepping off a 125 or a 250, and the smaller guys need to bulk up. They need to get some muscle together to be able to handle the bikes. We've seen that was, you know. Some of the small guys, and you know, so weights are going to be coming up. Not everybody can do it.
Well, Simicelli's not a little guy, but yeah, you're right. The rest of them.
But one thing that occurred to me when you were telling me that just before that was I'm trying to remember any conversation I've ever had with Liam where I didn't hear something that I hadn't read before.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly.
The guy. 90% of it are things that I can't repeat anywhere else. But
right. There's a special thread.
Exactly.
Anyway, exactly. Speaking of Cafe Latte, we also have Aoyama going to MotoGP possibly on a Cafe Latte bike, a Honda, but we don't know where the Honda's coming from.
True. They had talked earlier this year, kind of off and on, or maybe just kind of quietly mentioned they might have one more additional bike. We thought it might be a Scott bike. We thought it might be another LCR with that team, but we don't know yet.
Right.
And I don't think we're going to know it until the end of the year. But it could
be like turning the Scott team into a cafe latte team, which would take Tomashi's right away, and put Team Scott out of the MotoGP.
Or just another Scott bike.
Or yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like you said, there's quite a few permutations here. And we'll know, basically.
If Tomashi can keep paying through his sponsors for whatever ride he's got, I think he'll be back. I don't think anybody's going to not want him on the grid. Well, maybe the guys would have to pass him at the end of 28 laps, but... Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Oops, okay. Sorry, Gebber. I don't know. Hopefully he'll find some pace. That would be nice. It's never got to be fun to be the last guy across the line, or at least the last points paying guy across the line.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, it's just hard for me to believe because he is a really crafty, good racer, and he may just be too small, too weak, too whatever, something physically just. Or I don't know. I mean, he has the skill, it seems like, to be a top racer. He's got one world championship under his belt.
Maybe he just doesn't have the fire
I was just gonna say something like motivation or something like that.
I mean, he came in mid-season, obviously with no chance of any sort of decent finish. Maybe he's just using this as his test time in order to prepare for 2010.
Yeah. Yeah, although you'd think that he'd want to, show some progress.
Yeah, dude is a racer. I mean, let's race. And then your KTM news as well. That's kind of a shock.
That's really a shocker.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a shocker to me because KTM to me are a bunch of quitters, but KTM pulls out on 25s.
Yeah.
That's the last. So basically, they're out of GPs. And
how many KTMs are currently in 125s? Are there two or four?
I think there's four. Well, this is the Martinez bike, right?
Yeah, yeah. Martinez, Bobier, who else?
And then there's this like, oh, maybe it is just two.
There could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much for research, whatever. But yeah, so they're pulling out again, and apparently they're going to enter something in World Superbikes.
If they can put the RC8 into any kind of, they tried running that in Superstock, I think 2008, and it didn't do well, but they ran it in IDM, which is the German championship this year, and I think they won it. Maybe they're getting that bike into shape. It really, if they run a modified version of the RC8, it'll be pretty fun. And frankly, having another manufacturer in World Superbike can't be anything but good. But if they're going to come in, I want them to run well.
Yeah. But how well? Like BMW well?
Yeah, that'd be
or
fine.
Or Aprilia well?
BMW well would be great.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I like that. Although they'll quit soon.
Like I said to you back, I think you even deleted that entry. Moving on to, you and I can laugh about this later. World Superbike news. This isn't absolutely confirmed yet, but it's a fairly solid rumor. I've heard it enough places now that I think it's probably going to happen, which is Leon Camier from new BSB champion and Shaky Byrne, the 2008 BSB champion. Maybe on a second Aprilia squad next year.
That would be cool. And I think that Aprilia should totally run more bikes because they have a great bike.
Yeah, they do. And I think every time I see, Max or Simo or whoever up there running at the front, I'm like, how the hell did they do that? And like, we've only had, I don't think anybody's knocked one out of the park this well in any series that I can think of, a brand new bike.
Well, you could say Ducati 2003 MotoGP.
But,
they won a race.
Okay, they won a race, but they didn't Okay, you're right. That was the first, and that was their first year, right?
Yeah, they actually had a crappy year 2004, but 2003 they were solid. They had a couple podiums and a win.
Okay, I'll buy off on that.
Those Italians, man, they got racing in their blood.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you know?
Yes, they do. And you know, it's really fun actually seeing like the new R1, the RSV4, and the 1198 at the front of a race, and the different exhaust tones for those things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're completely different motors. Yeah. Completely different motors.
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoy that. So I hope that comes true for Kami and Shaky, and I'd like to see Shaky on a more solid squad. I think he's gotten kind of screwed this year with the pseudo sterile Garda team, and especially now that they've kind of defected over to the factory Yamaha group. So,
right.
And then what else we got?
And then we've got, we talked about Vibula and Kawasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
actually a big deal. It's a big deal and it's a weird deal at the same time. It's like, is that the best choice for him? Well, what's going to happen with Paul Byrne Motorsports? Are they going to get the kind of factory support that they need? I hope so. And I'd like to see Chris do really well. And I think if he had a solid bike under him, I think he could have a very impressive year. And I think Kawasaki's starting to come back on a little bit. You know, I talked earlier about Lascores and this very, very surprising results that he's had this year. But also we've got...
just on the Kawasaki thing, they basically have dropped out of every series, including the series that we don't speak of.
Right.
And so the concentration really is going to be on this team with Vermeulen, and I don't know who else is going to be beside him, but so they may very well be like a dark horse.
They could be, and I think this is kind of a preparatory move for what their big plans are for 2011, because my understanding is they've got a bike that they're putting together that kind of models itself a bit after the R1 and the cross-plane crank that's been so successful this year, or at least in Spee's hands, and in other series too, in Camier's hands and in Mladen's, or Josh Hayes' hands in the series that must not be named. So, you like that?
Yes. That's the better way to do it.
Okay. So yeah, we'll see. So it might be, I'm not sure if it's a 2-year deal or not. Hopefully they did get him on that and they can fully exploit him with the new bike in 2011.
Very cool.
And then finally, at least on World Superbike, word today, the Haslam was out from Stiggy, not immediately, but at, immediately post season. And the question at first was to where, but then.
Well, actually the first question is why?
Well, yeah, why? But we know why that is. It's because Stiggy is just starved for money.
Yeah.
And whether that is because of a reduction in Honda support, they did lose S2, which one of their primary sponsors, contractual split, I believe. But one team who seems to be doing okay, even though they also lost one of their primary sponsors due to a contractual split, was Francis Bada's Alstera Suzuki squad. And it sounds like that's exactly where Leon's going to land. And because of the immediate release, he'll be able to test the day after at Portimao, which is great for him. Scary for Stiggy, because that kind of tells me that they're not going to have any World Superbike riders at all, or Superbike class riders at all next year. If they're just left with Ant West, you know, God bless him, but that's certainly a reduced squad from the four guys they had at the beginning of the year. And you know that, you know, Stiggy had a great year.
Yeah.
Moving along earlier, and you don't want to see a stripped down or not even a non-existent squad. So I hope they can figure things out.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of like when Pons and Camel and all that kind of stuff was leaving with GP. You were like, oh man, it's such a good squad. They've got such good results and good riders, and suddenly they're just gone.
Yeah, not the kind of thing you want to see. And you know, the economy is screwed right now, and you know, there's lots of sponsors. I hope things pick up a little bit fast enough for next year to be able to support the teams and kind of racing that we want to see.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not end on a sour note, though.
I'm sorry.
Because we've got Phillip Island coming up the weekend after this one, and then the week after that we've got the finale World Superbikes at Portimao, and the weekend after that we got Sepang, and then a couple weeks after that we got Valencia. So we've got, you know, and it's going to be great to the finish in all the series except 125s. But even, I'm sure the races will be great because 125s are always good to watch.
What you're telling me is we've got a lot of work out of us, don't we?
It's good stuff though, because it's really fun to talk about this stuff. It would suck if all we had this weekend was the Estoril MotoGP race.
Very true. Well, we make up some bullshit about Moto 2 and, you know, talk about a lot of stuff like that. I don't know.
There you go. All right, so that's all we got, and I'll be talking to you next week, as always.
As always. Thanks, everybody.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Hey, this is Jim Race, and I have on the line with me once again, and I thank him very much for it, Eugene Laverty of the Park Algar Honda team. Welcome, Eugene.
Thank you.
So we haven't talked in a bit, and we've got a couple of races that have sort of water under the bridge at this point. And you've had, you know, kind of an up and down, and up for quite some time, and some, you know, really eye-opening things that were coming to you. You know, Imola was kind of a weird race, and I'm sure you thought, well, it was a pair of races, which would be nice if we had every weekend. Wouldn't it be good if you guys had double headers instead of these single races?
Yeah, I'd prefer double headers, to be honest, because in super sport you only get one bite at the cherry.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a problem in super biking, and if you get two shots at it, the first one doesn't work out, you can always make amends.
And so you kind of had that at Imola, but it certainly wasn't anything that was planned when Lascaux's bike popped its cork. And were you close enough? I can't remember off the top of my head. Were you close enough to get a little bit worried about what was coming out of the thing?
Well, I could see ahead when it did blow up, and I was spitting oil out over the circuit. I was lucky in the right-hander that, well, I was online, and I didn't manage to hit the oil, whereas a few people had missed their apex as they went down in the oil. And then I seen Lascaux up ahead, and actually when I came past them, I did get covered in oil. I don't even remember passing that closely, so there was a good lot of stuff coming out the back of the Kawasaki, and some of the corners in the rerun were actually really slippery as well. I lost the front at the next left hand hairpin, and so did Kanan Sofuoglu, speaking to him after the race. So I think the marshals actually missed a few points.
Yeah, and they threw down cement dust all over the place. And at first I thought it was a little bit of overkill, but in retrospect, when you tell me something like that, part of me was looking at him going, you know, why is he not just, you know, pulling over in the grass? Well, I think there was a long period of time where he didn't even know that the engine was going.
No, it seemed that way. He didn't know, actually, because he went into the next corner and braked as hard as he did in any previous lap, and the thing had smoke pouring out the back of it and pouring oil, so he was lucky. If he had tipped into the next one at the top of the hill, then that could have been a big crash, but he realized just soon enough that it was time to pull over. His race was done.
Yeah. What do you think of Imola? You know, I was during the races, and especially during yours, there was an awful lot of cement dust as well down from, I guess, from maybe one of the super stock races in that last chicane. What did you think of the course?
I liked it okay, to be honest. I got on well at the test there. The race proved pretty difficult, but I actually enjoyed the track. I can ride it pretty fast. We had some problems just at the race meeting itself. On the Saturday, we struggled because at the test back there in the summer, the so-called factory teams got the new rubber and new front tire, and we weren't allowed to use it, and all the guys had been going half a second faster with this front tire, so we couldn't wait until we got it. We got it at Imola. Race was the first one they brought it to. They didn't bring it to Brno or Nürburgring, so we were just looking forward to putting this new tire in and the thing working, but unfortunately, it didn't work right away. We had to change the setting a lot, and that's why we found ourselves down in the second row of the grid and struggling quite a bit, to be honest, and not even getting on to the same sort of lap times as we did at the test.
It seems to me at this point that the Parc Algar Honda results are more than adequate enough to give you guys the proper kit during a test. You guys are, I mean, clearly up there with the best of them.
Yeah, that's why I was frustrating at the test itself, because of course, Tincati got it as the official Honda team, but even Guy McCoy and Nanelli on the Triumphs, because they were factory Triumph team, they were getting the new tyres, and we were sat there in the old stuff when it didn't bother us as much at the time, but now looking back at it, the fact that we suffered at the race meeting because of it, that's frustrating, because when we're fighting for a world title, the politics of that shouldn't come into it.
Sure. But in the end, at Imola, you did get on the box in second place, and a good pal of yours nearly got on the box, and that must have been big fun for the weekend with Chaz there.
Yeah, that was unbelievable from Chaz, a brilliant result. And in the second run, he was lapping really quickly and was on the back of our group with Foray and Andrew Pitt as well. So to jump on the Triumph and do that right away, he shows the caliber of rider that we all know he is. I think a lot of people over here forget about him because he's racing an AMA, and out of sight, out of mind is often the case, but he definitely reminded people that he's no slouch.
I bet your eyes would have popped right open if he'd gotten past you.
Yeah, it would have been quite funny, but it's nice having Chaz there as well in the paddock. It's another friend.
Yeah, and you and your brother and Chaz and Pippa took a bit of I guess it's Michael's motorhome, and had a little bit of fun with that on your recent trips, didn't you?
Yeah, well, Chaz was lucky enough he had flown home, so he missed out on it, but we couldn't believe one thing after another when we had to try and squeeze through a toll booth, and there was no way we were going to get through there. We found out from the rest of the guys who were driving their big motorhomes, I think just about everyone lost a mirror because you couldn't get through unless you got rid of one of the mirrors, so we had to give it a whack, and that was one mirror gone. We pulled over for the night, and the next morning we woke up to a truck almost rolling the motorhome over. It was ridiculous. If we had the jacks down, I think it would have completely trashed the front end of it, but instead the tail end of the truck just lifted the rear end, lifted the front of the motorhome up, and it scared the life out of us, but did quite a bit of damage in the same time.
Did you guys get the guy's info, or was he just gone?
No, he was gone. He never knew that he'd hit us, and the time we looked out the windscreen, we couldn't see him past the other trucks that were parked there, and we had the doors all secured up and locked safely, so it took like 10 minutes to actually getting out of the thing. There was no way we were going to get him.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, I suppose it wasn't at the time. You were probably all a little bit pissed off, but...
Yeah, we thought we were going to be stranded because the windscreen was completely shattered. I still don't know how the hell we got the thing home, because it was shattered in so many places. We just... I don't know. You see those adverts when there's little chips and windscreens that turn into major cracks, but this thing was completely done. It was broken to end of bits.
keep it at a low speed so it doesn't just implode back in on you.
Yeah, that's the one.
So Imola was a good result. And then, so we moved on to Magny-Cours, and you looked real promising in the beginning of that race. And, you know, Magny-Cours got... You know, that's a track you haven't been to before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you looked real good, and you were running up at the front, and then I'm not sure how many laps in, you lost the front end. What happened?
Yeah, it was about mid-distance, and I didn't do much differently, and the front just folded on me. It's one of those tight little right-hand corners where I would usually... adding the knee in quite hard, but in corners like that, you don't really, because you want to get the thing turned so quickly, and you don't push your knee that it was gone before I knew it. I tried to get it in the elbow, but it was gone. I couldn't get it back up, so unfortunate, and handed it to Cal. I was ahead of him at the time, and I wasn't trying to push on too much, but things like that can happen in racing. Sometimes you just have little spills like that. It's not like I did anything drastically wrong.
But you did manage to remount, and we're kind of ripping back up through the field. But unfortunately, they threw the red flag with a few laps to go. That reverted to a prior lap, and you ended up finishing right behind your teammate, Michael. I suppose, though, that you've got to kind of thank the scores a little bit, right?
Yeah, the scores were riding really well all weekend. And yeah, it's been the last half of this year, to be fair to him. He is riding fantastic, and he deserves that win. So I was happy to see him get it. Yeah, I think a lot of people were.
And that keeps you within 19. Is that correct? Is that number right?
Yeah, 19 points.
Okay. But what that means is, I don't need to tell you, you know more than anybody else, but that going into the last race, and what truly is your home race in so many ways, home for the team, well, I guess Donington or Brands would be your home race, but I mean, this is probably one of the biggest races of your life coming up, is it not?
Yeah, it is going to be, but I gotta go out there and try and win it. I don't know anything can happen with Crutchlow, we've seen before.
Sure.
I'm not sure how many years ago it was that exact team went into the final round at Magny Cours with Kevin Curtin, and he had an 18-point advantage, and of course he went down, so that handed the championship to Sebastien Charpentier. So they know all too well what can go wrong, so they're not celebrating just yet.
Sure. You know, it was interesting, Simon puts out these, is the manager, or obviously for Paul Cargar, but he put out a bit the other day about kind of contrasting, comparing you and Cal, and as well as the bikes. And I thought it was interesting. And you can tell me better than anyone. Simon Buckmaster says that your guy's bike is faster than the Yamaha's. What do you think? I mean, I know I saw you get past him a few times at Magny Cours, but what do you think?
I don't need to answer that. I think you can see that. The Yamaha has a strong package, and we're doing a fantastic job with the Honda. But yeah, it's
hard to say.
I don't know what you can say.
It's all how you get out of the corner, frankly.
Yeah. Now we've got back on the similar pace with the Yamaha in the mid season when Cal had a big gap on us. It was impossible to race with them, but now we find a lot of acceleration lately, and we're back on a par with them at Imola. Even you could see that I was able to accelerate with Sofroglu out of the last chicane and actually pass him on the way up into the first corner, and I haven't been able to do that for a while. So it's nice to have that acceleration. We've always had top speed with our bike.
Sure.
That's never been an issue, but we've seriously been lacking some acceleration on the Yamaha and the Tincati bike, but we're definitely on a par with Tincati's bike now, which I'm happy to say. But yeah, it's looking like the Yamaha aren't going to be on the grid next year, so yeah, me and myself, Sofroglu and Lascaux may be able to breathe a sigh of relief at that.
when Brains went off, I don't know, it was four or five races ago, and worked with Akrapovic to get you a new system, did you find that helped right off the bat?
Yeah, there was a slight improvement with that, but not as significant as what we did over the past few weeks before Imola. We found a big chunk, so that was the main improvement we've had since the off season, to be honest. And yeah, it came at an important time, and in Magny Cours was able to hang right in there.
And lately, it seems like probably the biggest difficulty you've been having is trying to get proper front end feel. And it seems like it's been a couple of races where it's been difficult to find that quickly. Do you have any idea what's causing that? Do you think it's your increased speed?
No. Well, to be fair, we're trying that a little bit harder than ever. And where me and Cal were in the middle of the season, now Sofroglu and Lascaux are there with us, and we're leaving the rest of them 20 seconds behind.
Yeah.
And, Foray can get up in there. I don't think he's on the same level as the four of us at the front, but Yamaha has a lineman to challenge with us, and it's a difficult one.
Yeah. It seems like Foray's been close, but not close enough to have to worry about lately.
No, he's definitely been riding well.
Yeah.
And Imola, he was pushing me hard, but Cal's got the best out of the Yamaha, as you can see, and it's nice having all four different manufacturers there with the four of us. It's a pity that the Kawasaki seemed to take a long time getting up to speed, and Tincati, of course, had a bit of a bad spot in the mid-season, and that's why me and Cal got away with it. But it's fantastic for the Super 4 Championship to see four manufacturers all capable of winning on any one weekend.
Yeah, you know, and it's just as an aside, it is impressive to see the Kawasaki up there, because it lately hasn't been a bike that has been doing real well at the top of any race series, frankly. So I love seeing that. And you know, Lascaux is kind of a goofy guy that it's fun to see him win, because he really does. He wins and he has no idea what to do about it.
Yeah. It's going to be a real threat next year, Lascaux.
Yeah, and seems like a very clean guy to race against, no?
Definitely. He's very smooth. He's similar to me, the way he rides, and I really do rate him. I think he's going to be the toughest rival next year. Sofo Ogle will also be there. I don't feel that Sofo Ogle is on the same levels as myself or last course. The Honda definitely plays more to his strengths than it does mine. I would have to say that, so we can never count him out.
Excellent. Well, so now you got a couple of weeks between now and Portimao, the last race of the year. What are your thoughts, and what are you going to do between now and then?
We're going to get a ride at Portimao next week. The Yamaha guys are going to be there as well. I think it's a different day than us that they're going to be there. But we're all going to get prepared for the final round. There's a lot at stake. So I'll be off to Oulton Park for the final BSB this weekend, and then off to Portimao next week. But then I'll be back to Ireland the following weekend for the Sunflower race, which is a big race in Ireland. I think my brother Michael will be doing it. He's won there 5 or 6 times, so I look forward to going there to speak to him.
Cool. Is that a roads race? Or?
No, it's a short circuit, but it's a big one in Ireland.
Yeah. Your brother John, you know, speaking of Kawasaki's that may or may not be doing well, and it seems like he's coming on at the end of the season in BSP.
He has done qualifying. He's been really well, and he's done really well, and he's put a few good race performances together, so he's going to be strong next season. It's been great for him finally to have everything that he needs to show what he's capable of, and I'm looking forward to next year, seeing what he can do on it.
Excellent. Well, and briefly back to Portimao, that is, if your pseudo wild card replacement, I guess a replacement rider, stuff at the end of last year will certainly come into good stead, the fact that you've raced there before.
Well, I didn't actually race at Portimao, but I did
do the test
after the race meeting.
Okay.
That was the first place that I rode the Honda.
And that is quite the track, isn't it?
I loved it, to be honest. I'm not just saying that because obviously the team would want me to, but it is my favourite track. It's up and down. It has got everything. It's the sort of track that you wouldn't get bored of. But the strangest thing was the first 50 laps or so, you still couldn't push around the track because you couldn't exactly pick your apex and aim for the outside of the track because the outside of the track isn't there.
Yeah.
So many areas are blind, and you really just have to get used to the track before you can push. It's a little bit like Imola. When I first went there, I realised that for the first session you really couldn't push. It's not a track like Magny-Cours where you can watch back the DVD and pick your braking markers, have a look at the track and just piece it together like a jigsaw and just go fast, go hard from the word go. Imola and Portimao, you can't do that because it's not a matter of just picking a braking marker. It all has to flow there.
It has that one rise that you come over before you drop down real fast, and then I think it's a hard left to the bottom. But you see guys coming over that, and you can tell they're just fighting to keep the front end down. I'm not sure exactly what turn that is. Now, you've also been around there in a four-wheel vehicle, at least for...
I didn't have very much success in that. It was the first lap I actually spun it. I was in a Ferrari and lodged it on top of a high curb that was put there to stop cars shortcutting the hairpins. So that didn't go down well.
And whose car was that, Eugene?
The boss's.
Well, at least you still have a ride, and so I suppose that your results are at least keeping you in good stead.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that, I could have a hefty bill on my lap, I think.
Well, maybe, you know, post-season you can get out there again if, you know, go out in like a, you know, a little Fiat rent-a-car or something and, you know, get your markers on four wheels.
Yeah, I think he might have me out in that. The thing was, when I actually drove the Ferrari, he had warned me before I went out. Well, he didn't want us going out, but I pretty much sat in the Ferrari and said I wasn't leaving until we got a few laps. And he warned us that the rear tyres were done. And, of course, I said I was going to take it easy, but halfway around the lap I started going, and what was it, let go, but the rear tyres on the entry to the corner. So, yeah, boys and toys, I just didn't learn.
Yeah, you didn't. I'm going to go slow. All right, man. Well, listen, once again, I appreciate, and I know the listeners really appreciate you talking to us. And thank you. And spend the next 2 weeks getting ready for a big old race at Portimao. And we all look forward to seeing it. And best of luck. I want to see you go all the way to the end, pick it up, man. I think you can do it.
Yeah, I'm going to give up my all. All I can do is go out there and try and win it. And who knows what can happen. Racing's a funny game.
Yes, it is. Boy, there's a perfect cogent summary. Thank you, Eugene.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, that wraps it up. Thank you very much, Eugene, for talking to us. Thank you, of course, to Jim, who does such an awesome job interviewing. I just want to do one last mention. I could not find the link to the article I mentioned in the show, in the call with Jim, that my wife sent me, but I will get that by the time the next show comes out. And for those of you that are in the Bay Area or near the Bay Area, there is La Ducati Day is being held at La Honda on Sunday all day. So if you're around here, even if you don't ride a Ducati, you're more than welcome to show up. It's always a really fun time. And I just wanted to plug it extra special because we're going to be doing a Riders for Health event there with Adam Silver. And there's going to be some cool people there. Show up if you can. It's a lot of fun. Have a great week. And we'll talk to you next week. Ciao.